So as we begin the story, the journey through Exodus, those of you who are grammar people, and I know there's several of you in here this morning and watching online, you would be mortified at how the book of Exodus actually begins. I was taught from a very young age that you'd never, ever, 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 ever begin a sentence with the word "and." Karen Sauer, are you watching? But that is the first word of the book of Exodus. And. Now, your English translations are not going to have that, but because it begins with "and," it's a continuation of what has just been told, the saga, right? The story that has come forth from the book of Genesis. And Genesis, in chapters 37 through the end of the book, they tell us exactly why the sons of Israel, right, or the sons of Jacob, had taken their families to Egypt from Canaan. It's a miraculous story, right? Where Joseph, one of the sons of Israel, he is the favorite son of Jacob. And his brothers are jealous of him, and they sell him into slavery in Canaan, and he is taken to Egypt. And in a series of miraculous events that only God himself could orchestrate, this young man rises to the house of Potiphar. Then he's arrested, and he's thrown in prison. And then he comes out of prison, and he becomes the prime minister, essentially, of all of the Egyptian empire, second only to the king, who's known as Pharaoh. Now, it is believed that Joseph and his brothers lived sometime around the year 1500 BC. This is a disputed date. If you have a study Bible or if you have commentaries on the book of Exodus, you will find that these dates range within 300 or 400 years of each other. But there's a reason why many scholars, and I agree with them, that this is the correct date. This was a time when Egypt had been torn in two. A civil war had taken place, an invasion of Egypt had taken place, and a body of people from Canaan, which would be modern-day Israel, had invaded Egypt, and they had taken over the northern portion of the Egyptian empire. So think of the Nile Delta, where Cairo and the pyramids and all that are in your memory. You kind of envision that. That is the area that these people had taken over, and they were called the Hyksos. They were a Semitic people. Okay. Israel's family, Joseph's brothers and all of their siblings, all of their families, they were a Semitic people. And that is perhaps why the Pharaoh, who Joseph worked under, was so welcoming of Joseph's family to come, and he blessed them, and he loved them, and he gave them the best lands of all of northern Egypt. And the families thrived, and they grew. But a time came. Around the year 1250 to 1300, we don't know the exact year, but a time came when the Egyptian people overthrew those Semitic rulers in the north. Right? And they reestablished their governance over that portion of the Egyptian empire. And these people would have been very unhappy to have Semitic people living in their land. And that may have been one of the reasons why they were so hateful towards the families of Joseph. It says that Pharaoh did not know them. Well, no, he was from a different kingdom at that time, right? These are new people that were governing that region. They didn't want anybody under them, any people groups, any demographics that might cause problems, and they tried to persecute them and to drive them away. Remember, as we go into Exodus, there's a line I've been asking you all to memorize over the course of the last year or so, and it is from St. Augustine, Augustine of Hippo, and he actually wrote this concerning the book of Exodus in a commentary he wrote. The new is in the old concealed, and the old is in the new revealed. And as we enter now into this saga of redemption that we find in Exodus. I believe you're going to see the gospel permeating the pages if you read it and if you understand it with a baptized Christian imagination. So let's see here. In Genesis chapter 12, right, the Lord comes to a man named Abram. He's a pagan living in a foreign land. And God says to this man, Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household into the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. And all of the peoples, or all of the families on earth, will be blessed through you. Abram would become Abraham. And God makes a binding covenant with him in Genesis chapters 15 and 17. And he seals this covenant, right, this promise that he will be their God and they will be his people through the physical act of circumcision. God, by God's very nature, cannot be unbound from that which God has bound himself to. And in that promise, which God makes with Abram or Abraham, which is further expounded, you know, in chapters 15 and 17, God makes a promise to the people. That is, Abraham, already an old man who has no children and is living in a foreign land, that he will become a great nation. And he promises them that the land of Canaan will become his family's home, that that will be their land. 400 years, okay, now before Exodus 1, before what we've just read took place, these promises that God has made to Abraham seem to be under threat. It looks as if famine would wipe out the entire family of Abraham. But in God's providence, God arranges things, again, as I just shared with you a moment ago, that Joseph, one of Abraham's great-grandsons, would save the people of the Near East by becoming the prime minister of Egypt. He would gather grain during good years so that there would be food during the bad years of drought and famine. Joseph's family, his entire extended family, is moved to Egypt at Pharaoh's invitation, and Pharaoh blesses Joseph and his family as he serves in his court. And it was interesting, as I was reading this week, as I was studying, I had an epiphany. I learned where the first tennis match is mentioned in the Bible. Did you know that tennis is mentioned in the Bible? It's when Joseph served in Pharaoh's court. All right. Moving right along. 4 centuries after Joseph has saved the people, here now at the beginning of the book of Exodus, that promise that God has made seems to be being fulfilled. Right? The opening verses list the sons of Israel who came to Egypt originally. There were 70 people. And now they have multiplied greatly and they have filled the land of Goshen, which is a fertile region of Egypt. The Hebrew people, Joseph's family, grew to such a level that the governing class began to become fearful of them. Right? There's a lot of xenophobia that was taking place in the land at that time. And in verses 8 to 14 this morning, we read that they were enslaved. In verse 10, the king, the Pharaoh, believes that in enslaving the people, he will stop them from multiplying. But then at verse 12, we read that the more the people are oppressed, the more they actually multiply. And I would offer you today in the world that every single place in the world where the Christian church is being persecuted, where Jesus is hated, and the church is openly being oppressed, she's growing. She's growing. Oppression causes faithfulness. It's like sifting the chaff from the wheat. With enslavement and oppression failing to curb the Hebrew population, Pharaoh tells the midwives at verses 15 and 16 to kill every newborn baby boy that is born. What a horrendous thing to ask of these women. But they fear God. They defy the authority of the king. This is an unjust, unholy command of Pharaoh, and the midwives are right in rejecting his command.